You're listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. We're bringing in some of the best baseball minds you can find anywhere. I'm your host, Harold Mazingo. Before we get started, make sure you subscribe, give us a rating, share with your friends, do whatever you got to do so we can keep this train rolling. Now let's dive in. All right, today's guest is a new assistant coach at Eastern Mennonite University, Cam Earls. Cam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Cam, you're kind of a special one for me to have on. I would be remiss if I didn't kind of go through your story a little bit or our relationship a little bit. So, Cam, when I first got home from playing pro ball in 2011, so this is 2012, I had a 13U travel team that I coached, and I coached it for 2 years, and Cam was on that first team that I coached. And now having Cam being a college coach, it's kind of a cool story, and I'm excited to have him on. So Cam, I'm gonna let you kind of tell your story and your journey on how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, so I was not, like, I was a very unathletic high school kid. Had to work very hard to where I got to. I had a lot of struggles in high school, just did not develop well in high school, but worked really hard. Played a lot of travel ball when I was younger. Like you said, Harold, I started playing at 13U with you, and then it kind of grew from there. Worked very hard in high school. Had a little bit of success at Essex High School, and then my senior year, I started getting recruited by Eastern Mennonite University, where I ended up attending, and I was recruited by Daniel Rollins at Bryant and Stratton, and talked to Travis Beasley a little bit at Lynchburg, but decided to go to Eastern Mennonite, and then played 5 years there, took a COVID year. My sophomore year got cut short COVID, but yeah, played 5 years, dealt with a lot of injuries there, but through injuries, I really dove deep into studying the mechanics of pitching, getting into the analytics of pitch design with you, doing internships with you in the summer, working with you, and then kind of fell in love with the coaching side. And that's kind of how I got into it last year. Used my ended up tearing my labrum my senior year. And then my fifth year, decided to just kind of be like a student manager, helped out coaching at Eastern Mennonite, and then became a part-time assistant, volunteer assistant this year. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah, nice. So I do think it would be kind of cool if we talked about your recruiting process in high school just a little bit more, because I'm fortunate enough, this is going to be a little bit interesting podcast because I know a lot of your story, so I've got a lot of insight here. But I think what was really cool about yours is your journey sort of came down to your last high school start. So I want you to talk through that a little bit.
Yeah. So it quite literally came down to the last pitch that I ever threw in high school, that my last regular season appearance in high school. It was my senior night that Coach Posey, now head coach here at Eastern Mennonite, and Daniel Rollins, which is now the head coach at Pawtucket Camp, they were both there to watch me my senior night. That's how late I was getting into the recruiting process. I was really late. I played travel ball from 13. I dealt a little bit of stuff around 16 with my shoulder, around 16 years old with my shoulder. So didn't get to play there, but which kind of hindered me getting recruited, I feel like, and just everything. But I was not the most athletic person on the field, and I realized that when I was younger, and it kind of, I had to persevere and really be, especially on the mound. Like, when you're talking about baseball on these days, everybody's looking at velo and movement on pitches, and I didn't really have the velo there on the fastball. So I was a below average velo on the fastball, especially for college. So it was really hard for me to get recruited, and going through that process, it was kind of frustrating for me because I was like, man, I'm putting on all this work and it's just not kind of working out. That for a while, I was like, man, am I ever going to make it? And just kind of kept on pushing through that. But yeah, the recruiting process literally came down to my last pitch in high school because.
Hey, so I don't know if you remember this or not.
Yep.
But so I don't come to any high school baseball games, but I came to that game and I came over to the dugout. I guess it was sometime around late third, fourth inning, I guess, maybe after one of those two innings.
Yeah.
And I came over there and pulled you out of the dugout, which I never get involved in that stuff, but I thought I kind of had to. And I told you that you needed to throw your curveball. And you had thrown one through, like, the first three or four innings. And Coach Posey there, he loved that curveball that he saw, and he wanted to see it again. And I came over there, and I told you, I said, Cam, come here. Throw your curveball. And you're like, well, I can't shake off. I said, I don't care what you got to do. Tell him you didn't see it. Throw your curveball. So I don't know if you remember that or not, but that was always a funny thing that I remember about that night. That night there.
Yeah, I think it was – I do remember that. I talk about that a little bit about how I got recruited here at school when players asked me. I was like, man, my senior night when Coach Posey came to see me, I think I threw maybe 10 curveballs in the whole game just because I just was literally just with their fastballs in there. I wasn't a big strikeout guy in high school, so I would literally just pitch to contact, and I was going to do that with my fastball a lot in high school, try to get ground balls and try to get outs early. But my curveball is literally the reason I'm in college, and Coach Posey will tell you that. He told me that on my call. So him and Coach Rollins both kind of had the same plan for me and both wanted me for the same reasons. They both really liked the curveball. They both thought that the curveball played well at the college level, and they thought they could just develop me, get my fastball velo up, that I could be good. But they both wanted to bring me in kind of as, at the time, Lance McCullers for the Astros was the first person to really start pitching backwards and using his curveball to as like a get me over and using it early in counts instead of the fastball to get ahead in counts. So that's kind of how they both saw me being used in college. And yeah, that's literally the reason why I got recruited.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool thing. And you probably should have went to school the next day, but we're not going to get into that today. all right. So I want you to talk a little bit now, fast forward all these years, right? You're now an assistant coach, and let's talk about the recruiting process. Like, so this is really geared towards the younger high school players that want to play in college, just some of the things that you're looking for and some advice to them to help them along with their journeys.
Yeah, so when I'm still really young into the recruiting process, but when we go out and look at players, I'll talk about the pitching side because that's what I know most. And what I'm looking for is, one, how much can a pitcher fill up the zone? So it's going to be different, a little bit different at each level of baseball that you're trying to get to. But at the D3 level, and what we're looking for is how well can you fill up the zone, for one. If you're walking a bunch of guys but have a high velo, but you can't control it, for me, that's like, yeah, we can try to fix that, or we can try to take somebody else that maybe has a little bit less velo but fills the zone up and gets outs early. So for me and for us, that's number one, how can you fill up the zone? And then we go to looking at the velo and on the fastball and then the secondary stuff. So that's kind of like how we start the process. And then when we look at guys on the mound, it's, are they athletic? Do they have confidence? What's the body language look like when they're pitching? I like to see guys get in tough situations because that's really when you see the characteristics of a pitcher come out. They're either going to be a dog and get some outs when stuff starts getting tough, or they're going to kind of crumble up and body language is going to start looking kind of crappy, and they're going to start putting blame on other stuff or like start showing frustration. And I like to see guys who kind of persevere through that and still get 100% effort on every pitch. So that's kind of like what we look at. We're not so big on trying to get the most velo out of guys if they can't throw strikes. We're really looking at guys that can command the zone and have at least one secondary pitch that is going to play at this level. We're not looking for guys that have 3 and 4 pitches, because we can try to develop those over the 4 years, unless you already have them. If you have them, that's a plus. But if you can command the fastball and have one off-speed pitch that you can command, that's really a plus, because there's not a lot of guys that can do that. So that's already going to put you ahead there.
No, that's phenomenal stuff there. And I'm going to go off of that a little bit. So you've talked about kind of three sort of, groupings of things that you're looking for with command, the stuff, and then like the makeup of the player. How much do you look at like high school stats? Is that something that you really care about? It helps supplement those other things, or is it something that you start with?
So, to be quite frank with you, I could care less about high school stats. The high school stats can be very skewed in how they are perceived, because high school stats are taken by scorekeepers who are either parents or coaches who have to coach the game. So there's a lot of stuff that gets overlooked, the way people score stuff. So I could care less about high school stats. If you get all state, first teams, all that, that's really cool. But the thing I got told literally my first day on campus at EMU was by seniors, like, we don't care what you did in high school. That doesn't matter now. All that matters is what you do when you get to college. And that's literally all that matters. Nobody, when you get to college, is going to ask you how you did in high school, because at this point, it doesn't matter. And when we look at guys in the recruiting process, we're not going to go out there and say, oh, what was his batting average? What's his on-base percentage and stuff like that? We're more looking at, like, for hitters, like, how much consistency does he have, like, bat-to-ball skills? How hard is he hitting the ball? Is he hitting the ball hard often, or is he only making weak contact? Is he toolsy? Like, does he have speed? Like, stuff like that for hitters. For pitchers, we don't look at anything for pitchers. It's more of like, does this guy have the makeup to be a dude at the D3 level? Can he help us progress our program to the next level?
Yeah, no, wonderful answer. And I think so many parents and young kids are so caught up on the now of everything, right? So they're so caught up on those stats, my ERA, my wins, loss, my batting average, right? And college coaches just aren't they don't care about that. The only thing that's going to matter to someone trying to win at their perspective level is, do you have things that can help us at this level? I don't care about the level you've been at. Can you help us at the level that I'm currently at, right? And that's just kind of something that parents and young players miss a lot on, because that's just what that's kind of what they're taught from a young age, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I had the same mistake too, even like, when I was in high school, I got really caught up in like looking at ERA and looking at that stuff. But once I got to college and then getting on this side, I'm really starting to understand, like, dude, none of that stuff really matters, just because, like, if you're a good – you can be a good high school athlete, but with no promise of helping a college program. And that's just the reality of the situation. Unless a college coach sees potential in you helping their program, then – they don't care what your stats look like. You could have a 2.8 ERA, but if you don't have the makeup and what a coach is looking in that for you, then you're just not going to get recruited by that coach.
Yep. Perfect. 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 All right. So you mentioned that, like, what you're looking for to help guys develop over the next 3 to 4 years once they get on your campus, right? So let's shift a little bit and talk about some of the things that you and Eastern Mennonite University are doing to help guys, especially on the pitching side. That's what we're really focusing on here, to help develop guys once they get there.
Yeah, sir.
Because I'm asking that because I think y'all are going in a wonderful direction right now. So I want you to talk about it.
Yeah, so kind of like what I talked about in the recruiting process, like, we look at the same stuff for our guys. Like, can they command the zone? What does their stuff look like? And then can they get outs is the biggest thing that we look at. Like, so the first thing is, like I said, is the biggest thing is command. Can we command the zone? And the way we work on that now is if we are not commanding the zone, it probably means that mechanically we're flawed. So we're going to start. So to make you command the zone, to help you command the zone better, we're going to work on mechanics and movement patterns to help you get in the zone more, because there's a slight, I think it's like a 5-degree difference of where your hand's going to be, if it's going to be a ball or strike. And that's such a small degree of error. Like, you're never going to be able to fix that, but getting your arm and movement patterns with the lower half and the correct positions will allow your body and your arm to throw more strikes because you're in a better position to be more in the zone, right? So the more directionally we can get you towards the plate and better positions we can get your lower half in, that way your arm can be up on time and in good position, healthy positions, then you're going to throw more strikes and your stuff is going to probably play a little bit better. So that's kind of what we look at first. Like, can we help you with the movement pattern stuff first to get you in the zone and maybe throw harder at the same time first? And that's what we're looking at. Because if you can't command the zone, which has been a huge problem for us in the past, like, if you can go back and look at our stats, like, this isn't any secret. Like, we've had a really tough time commanding the zone. So that's one thing that we're working really hard at, like, command the zone and really try to dominate the zone. I'd rather see you get hit. I'd rather see you give up 10 hits than give up 4 walks, because those 4 walks can lead to more runs than the hits. Because you can always get, if the guys are putting balls in play, you can get those ground balls and fly balls. But if you're letting walks, if walks are being let up, then that walk can turn into a steal. Then a runner on second with no outs and a blooper over the second baseman head is a run scored. So being able to control the zone is number one key to getting outs and winning baseball games.
Yep, absolutely. So you mentioned gaining velocity. So everyone in today's world has kind of been consumed with that velocity, 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 right? And trying to really rush velocity development, right? And for a lot of people, we need to have some patience on this, right?
Yeah.
Like, let the guys develop physically. And then that happens a lot once they get to college. They go off to college. They're really on some strength programs for the first time, some real strength programs. They're putting on some meaningful weight. And now we have a chance to really go out and develop some of that velocity. So what are some of the things that y'all do there to kind of help aid in velocity development?
So,
and what are your thoughts around what I just said as well?
I agree with you. Like, I think, especially in, like, youth sports, like, velocity is pushed so much to try to get to that next level. Everybody wants to be a D1 athlete, but when they're doing that, they're putting so much stress on your body to gain that velo so quick that their injuries happen. And I believe there should be a slowly progress, like you said, letting your body mature in that way, and don't try to rush it. But what we kind of do is right now we're letting these guys, especially the freshmen that have never really been on a strength program or maybe thrown that much, be like, go up in the weight room, gain that strength. Maybe some guys need to gain some weight while, like, gain some mass, gain some weight. Maybe some guys need to lose a little bit of weight that they had in high school and turn that into muscle. Just overall strength training, I think, is the biggest thing that's going to help a pitcher specifically, like, stay healthy, gain velo, and getting your body into better positions. Because without strength, there's everything else just going to fall apart. You can have the most perfect mechanics in the world, but without strength and muscles to be there to support your body's going to break down and fall apart. So that's one thing that we really push on our guys, is getting to the weight room. And then, like, when they come out to practice and we're working on stuff, we're not doing, like, weighted ball stuff. We use driveline plyos to work on mechanical patterns, like movement patterns, during pre-throw. And we do some mound blend stuff, mound plyos with, like, core velo belts and stuff like that, just to work on movement patterns. But my thinking and philosophy behind it is, the better we can get your movement patterns and the more athletic we can get you on the mound, the velo will come with the strength and movement patterns. It's just not trying to force it to come too early, because I don't want to put your body in a situation where we're really trying to push it, push it, push it, and then we end up hurting you more than we'd help you. So I think, like, the safe way and good, healthy way is develop those movement patterns, get them up into the weight room, put on that muscle, get on either if they're skinny, put some weight on them, make them go eat more, get them in the weight room, get the strength on them. But if they're, and then on the opposite side, if they have a little bit too much weight, get them in the weight room, like just get them strong and then get the movement patterns down. And I think the velo will come from that and not trying to push it and like weighted ball pull downs and stuff like that. There's a time and play for that, for sure. But I don't, that's not a big focus for me. For me, it's really hammering out the movement patterns. And I believe from that, that's where the velo will be gained.
Love it. Love it. Love it. All right. So let's, transition a little. Well, let's first go back and talk about something, because you're talking about like adding strength and adding weight and all, right? And that's one of the struggles for me personally, right? When I have, and you'll know this because you may or may not be one of the ones I struggled with on this, but trying to convince high school athletes like what they need to do to gain that weight and to add, and why adding strength is so important, right? Sometimes it's very hard to get that buy-in at the younger ages. And that sort of, once they get to college, helps them, because it's such a commonplace there, right? Once you get to college, that's what everyone is doing, so it becomes easier. But the high school athletes, I think it's so important for them to start building that base. But it's, a lot of times it's hard to break through to those guys on how, just how much they need to be eating for a lot of them, not everybody, but for a lot of guys, how much they need to be eating to add weight, and also how important the strength part is, right? So is that something that you find that you struggle with there with the guys coming in? I would guess the answer is no, but I do want to ask you that.
So yeah, I agree with you. Like, to be honest with you, I was one of the ones that pretty hard-headed about it in high school.
A little bit.
But it, yeah, for me, like if you look at players out of high school that go on to be really successful, like if you look at Max Clark, look how ripped he is. Look how jacked he is. Like he is a lot of muscle, and there's no denying that's why he has so much juice at the plate. Like, yes, he's a fantastic hitter, and it's really hard to be a hitter at that caliber, but his juice comes from being strong, and he's a high school guy. Like, there's college guys that aren't that strong and aren't that powerful, but he is so dedicated to it out of high school, and that's what a lot of guys out of high school don't understand. They think, man, just the more I throw and if I do good, I'll get there. But the reality is, if you're not strong and you don't have, like I said, the check marks, like you're not going to be recruited. So it's very important for high school athletes to understand, like, yes, getting into the weight room, especially once you start, I would say like once you start ninth grade, that is where you should begin your learning process of the weight room, like not going in there and maxing out, but learning how to lift properly, getting the forms down, starting to develop your strength and conditioning programs. That way you have a good foundation once you get to college. But yeah, like there have been times in the past, especially when I was a player, yeah, like it was hard to get guys to buy into like the weight room, but that's where this year has been so much different. Like our guys have become animals in the weight room. It's been really helpful having a strength and conditioning coach this year. We haven't had one for a while. And we were able to get one in the spring of last year. His name is Michael Reeson. He had played at Lynchburg and then went to App State for his master's program and worked with the baseball team there. So he's very knowledgeable, really knows what he's doing, and our guys love him. They love going up to the weight room. He's created a great environment for our guys to go up there and get after it. Like he gives them the program, helps them with the movement stuff, making sure they're not going to hurt themselves, but he lets them really bring the energy in there and creates a great environment for our guys just to be able to get after it. It's been really cool to see, and it really translates to out there at practice. Like those guys go out there and get after it in the weight room with each other, and they see and they push each other. Like our max days are at 6 o'clock in the morning, and there's videos of these guys just absolutely getting after it with everybody maxing. Like, the whole gym is just going crazy, and it's just been really cool to see this year how much everybody's bought into the weight room aspect of it.
Yeah, I wish I had a clap button. I would have been clapping the whole time. I love that. Love to hear that. All right. So you going back to something else you said, I just kind of got to go back to this. You were talking about commanding the baseball as kind of priority number one. And you talked about like some of the velocity stuff as a secondary thing. So we got to touch on that just a tad bit. I want you to kind of clarify would be the right answer. Or maybe you mean it just the way you say it. I don't know. But for my experience in our area here anyways, with a lot of the players and a lot of the coaches, they hear those messages and they think that means like the guys that throw 87, they can't control the ball, are absolutely worthless, right? Which I somewhat agree with, right? Just I'll throw that out there. I do agree with that. But they think like the guys that go dominate at the high school level at 72, 73, because they just command the ball so well and know how to throw their breaking balls for strikes, they think that they are far superior to the guys that throw hard. They can't command the ball. But what you're really sort of after is checking all the boxes to a degree, correct?
Yeah, so when I'm talking about like commanding the ball and then velocity after, like I'm not looking – so when I talk about velocity, like commanding the ball, you have to meet the fastball has to look a certain way for me to be like, okay, I'm kind of interested in this guy. He's been commanding it. Let me go see what his velo's like. If I can pretty much tell like this velo's not it, then I'm not going to be interested. I'm not going to really pay attention, because even if he does command it good enough, like it's not going to play here. There are times like when a guy is going to be for us, like 5-7, if he's a little bit wilder, like I'm not saying I'm not going to take him, because I believe like if he's 5-7, I'm taking a chance on him, even if he can't throw strikes, because it might be my hard headedness, but I believe like if we work on movement patterns and stuff like that, we can get him to throw strikes. And the other thing that people don't realize is like the harder. So when you're 78 to 80 in D3, you are not able to miss a spot. You have to have plus plus command, and nobody really has plus plus command at D3, right? Like we're just out there trying to get outs. So the more velo you can have, the more room you have for error, right? Like you can miss a little bit more over the plate and get outs. But when you're 78 to 80, that miss over the plate's going to get hammered for a home run or double in the gap or something like that, just pounded. So when I talk about command, like, yes, command is important, but the velo is just as important to me too. Like, so it kind of goes both ways. Like you have to meet a certain threshold and of the fastball for me, like, yeah, like that fastball is going to have to kind of surprise me and grab my attention first, even if you are commanding it. Because I've seen plenty of guys like that have commanded it, but are 73 to 75. And it's like, yeah, you can command it and you have a decent breaker, but that big breaker at 62 and the fastball at 73 to 75 is not going to play, because big breakers in college don't work. They don't get outs. They're more of like a get me over pitch because they're so big. Hitters can just lay off of them. They know they're not going to be in there for a strike. So you have to be able to throw decently hard, like a little bit hard to get out.
Oh, man. Cam, I wanted to go a different route after this, but we got to jump into something you just said. So you mentioned the big slow breakers, and we got to discuss pitch design a little bit now, because I think that's such an important piece. So many of these high schools – so we're going to – this season is supposed to be about youth baseball, so we're going to tie in youth baseball this way today, right? So when people first start out into youth baseball, right, we start progressing. The guys are throwing fastballs. Somewhere around 9 to 11, everybody starts playing around with these breaking balls, right? And by the time you get to 11 and 12, almost everyone's throwing breaking balls, right?
Yep.
And everyone, the coaches, parents, players, they're so enamored with these big, loopy breaking balls. Right, because they are very successful against very young hitters who have never seen breaking balls, right? And that's something that people like to see. They like to see the big break. That's what they think equates to a good curveball. So we got to talk about why – you just mentioned why it's not a good pitch, right? But let's talk about what you are looking for out of a breaking ball in particular, and why that's sort of a big mistake that people are making at such a youth level, being so enamored with that big loopy curveball.
Yeah, so my thing with the big rookie breaking ball is there is a time and place for it. And for me, that is 0-0 or 1-0. There is no hitter, unless this is just a very flat, like, curveball. There's no hitter in the country that is trying to sit breaking ball in an 0-0 or 1-0 count. Those guys are trying to look fastball and hammer something that they can really handle, right? So that, not saying there's not a time and place for it, but it's not an out pitch. It's not going to get out.
Hey, so not to cut you off. Well, yeah, I am cutting you off, but I want to talk about – I want to just clarify something real quick so we're making sure that we're on the same page. You're talking about, like, once you get to college level, right? So most guys in, like, the youth – when we're talking, like, Little League baseball and even and through a lot of, like, lower-level high school programs, most of those hitters aren't really – sitting on anything, right? They're just kind of up there swinging at whatever they see, right? So you're talking about guys that actually have an approach to hitting, correct?
Yeah, so, like, if you go back to, like, Little League, yes, those curveballs work because, like you said, like, Little League guys and even in high school, like, hitters don't really have that approach until you – the guys that have the approaches and that can really hit are usually the guys that you see go play and higher divisions, right? Because they're pretty good hitters. If you already have an approach and can kind of control yourself and know what you're looking for at an early age. But that's why those big breaking balls can pretty much play at the lower, at like the Little League and high school levels, because you can still get outs. You can still trick hitters at that level because they want to be so aggressive and putting the ball in play. You can try to flip that thing in there and they see the big break and they're like, oh, I can really hit this. And they try to swing out their shoes to try to hit it because it's a big breaker and it's slow. Or they think, or it's so big that they're like, there's no way this thing's going to be a strike, and they just take it. So at the lower levels, yes, there's people really get caught up in that big breaker. But like the more you move up and the higher you want to advance into baseball, those big breakers really become obsolete because they just don't play at the higher levels that like they do at the lower levels. If you take, yeah, like they just don't. Even so, if you take Clayton Kershaw, right, like greatest curveball and one of the best breaking balls in the history of baseball, but he got told even as a rookie, like, hey, if you don't develop a slider or something other than a curveball, you're not going to be able to pitch in this league because you don't have anything hard that's going to get out other than that curveball, right? So it's
right.
It's kind of like even at that stage, he was that good to get there, but he wasn't able to make it to the next level without developing that third pitch because the breaker was so much slower than his fastball.
Yep. So what are some of the things that you're doing? So you guys get to Eastern Mennonite and you're going to kind of look at them to see where they currently are. What are you doing to look at like how their pitches play for your level?
So like when I'm looking, when they, all right, so I'll go like recruiting first. Like when I'm looking at them, I'm looking at the, like I said, the makeup of them, but when I'm looking at how they use their pitches and if it's going to play at the next level when we're recruiting, it's how well can they first, like I said, dominate the zone with it? Can they land it for a strike while still getting like, how does the hitter look when he throws it? Like, does he look like he's fooled on it when he's throwing it against hitters, or do the hitters see it out the hand for one? Because if the high school hitters can see it out the hand and they're getting pretty good contact on it, it's probably not going to play at the next level, right? So that's kind of like what it look at. Like, what do the swings look like from hitters on these, or like what does the spin and movement look like when we have TrackMan or like Rapsodo set up at these different events? But when they get to EMU, like we always play inter squads during our fall. It's no secret. So we kind of let our guys be during those inter squads. We don't try to play with their stuff unless they're returners. When they're even returners, we don't try to play too much with their stuff during those times because they could have worked on a whole bunch of stuff during the summer and gotten better. So we kind of evaluate during those first couple of inter squads and see how they're pitching, see what the pitches look like, and we chart everything so we can get the swing and misses on the different pitches and stuff like that. And then after that, we can really dive into, like, all right, is this pitch getting swing and miss? Is he getting outs? because even the guys that don't have the best looking stuff on Rapsodo, but throw from different arm angles or have weird, like funky arm action, that stuff will play just because they move a little bit funkier. So you really have to see how stuff plays with what they have first before you start messing with stuff, because if they get outs with the stuff they have and it's consistent, you don't want to mess that up for a guy, because that can really hinder a guy more than help. So you really got to see like what's working for a guy first, and then take it from there, like adjust from there. If the guys, so we had one guy this fall, like had a fastball curveball, not a little bit of changeup, but not really. Breaking ball is really big. He has pretty good life on the fastball, but like we're talking about, the big breakers, has a big breaker. And if you look at it, you're like, man, that's a good pitch. But when he goes into a game, it's a very easy pitch to lay off of for a hitter, because it has to start at the head to land, to go into the zone, right? So it's after the fall, we looked at his numbers and it's like, man, that pitch didn't get any swing and miss on it. So it's like, now we have to develop an out pitch for that guy. So he got outs during the fall, but it's like, we can get more consistent and quicker outs if we have a better out pitch. So it's developing an out pitch at that point. So it's like looking at the arsenal that they have when they come in or come back as returners and developing it from there. Seeing how it plays against our hitters, seeing how they compete with the stuff and what they really feel comfortable throwing. Because not all the time a pitcher is going to feel comfortable throwing a fastball in every situation. Sometimes I know a couple pitchers that love throwing their sliders in big counts because they feel like they can just flip it in there at any point they want. So, and they actually have better command of their slider than they do the fastball. So it's getting to know your pitchers as well, not even just pitch design. It's getting to know your pitchers and knowing how to call a game for your pitchers as well too. So it's a whole bunch of different stuff that goes into pitch design.
I couldn't love that answer anymore. It was hard for me not to chime in and just agree with everything you were saying there. But that was tremendous stuff. Now, one kind of last topic I do want to touch on. Do you have any thoughts on like what's going on in youth baseball on the pitching side today? Like, is there anything glaring that jumps out at you at all? I don't know how much you keep up with the youth side of things, but just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it if you have any.
Man, to me, like, especially on the pitching side or just baseball, youth baseball in general, like, everything is kind of moving away from the little league aspect and going more towards the travel ball and playing so many tournaments from a young age and just going from there. So to me, like, if you look at the people, the athletes out of high school who advance and are really good athletes, most of the time are playing more than just baseball. They're multi-sport athletes and they're good athletes at multiple sports. And there's no secret behind that. It's because they played a bunch of different sports growing up. And that's,
hey, feel free to tell them who the best athlete you've ever seen is, Cam. Don't be shy.
Oh, I don't know.
tell them who wins everything we do at the facility. Dude, there's one guy that never loses.
I don't know, but
still undefeated. You know,
I might.
I'm just saying. I might still. No, let me stop. Go ahead. Let me stop interrupting. Go ahead, Cam.
But no, like, I think like playing multiple sports during the youth age, especially younger ages, really getting kids active in different sports, like not just making them play baseball, is huge. Because the more athletic you can be, the easier baseball is going to come when you get to high school. For me, it's like, why are you pushing your 10, 11 year old to go play travel baseball when in 3 years, maybe he doesn't even like the sport because he had to play so much as a younger kid that you drove the love for the game out of him. Like, really finding a balance of, like, yes, youth kids love to play baseball, but they need to be able to play other sports too and develop that athleticism and stay athletic and really learn other sports. Because how do you know if you want to play baseball in college if you've never played anything else? Or how do you know if you aren't good at anything else if you never do it? Like, go out there, be athletic, don't put all of your eggs in one basket with baseball from a young age, even in like different positions in a young age, like in Little League and travel ball. These coaches don't let the players play other positions. They're like, you're a shortstop, you're a second baseman, you're a first baseman. Dude, these kids are like 10, 11 years old. Let them go play every position. Let the guys who don't get to pitch, pitch. It doesn't really matter at 9, 10 years old because a coach wants to win first place in a tournament. Who cares? Like, these kids need to have fun when they're playing baseball at a young age. Don't teach winning is everything. Winning is everything at a higher level. But when you are at a young age, like that 9 to 11-year-old, that's such an important time for those kids to find out what they really love. Like, go let them have fun on the field. Go let them have fun outside of baseball. Let them play other sports. Let them be athletic.
Love it. That couldn't have been any better said. So, Cam, I have absolutely thoroughly enjoyed this. So I want you just take a second to tell people kind of how to find you, how to reach out to you, if they have any interest whatsoever in like an Eastern Mennonite, not to violate any rules you have there. But if they are interested in the program at all and how to find you individually through social media or what have you.
Yeah, so ever interested in school, we get emails all the time from coaches, kids that are interested. You can feel free to email. Our contact information is always on our EMU Royals baseball page. Me, Coach Posey, and Coach Strauterman, our hitting coach. And then my Twitter is just my name on Twitter, Camden Earl. So, yeah, pretty easy, pretty accessible if you ever want to get in touch. And feel free. Like, we love showing our campus off. Our campus is beautiful, and we love showing off the Harrisonburg area. So, if you're interested, we're easy to find.
All right, assistant coach at Eastern Mennonite University, Cam Earls. Go Royals, right?
Go Royals.
Yep. Well, thanks for coming on, Cam. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the channel so you can get notified when the latest episodes are coming out. Share it with all your friends. Leave us a review. Be sure to check me out on all the social media accounts. It's going to be at Mazingo Baseball. And check out the website, mazingobaseball.com.